Good evening, America. Good morning, Australia. And welcome to everyone listening across the planet. We are back on the show today with our ongoing series with Mel B and Unwavered Success. But before we get onto the show, just a reminder, if you're listening live on LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter, Payo is ready and waiting to answer your questions and provide you with links for anything that we talk about on the show today. And we have another great show planned. If you need to catch up on these shows, please join us on Binge Networks USA, Hero Go TV, and the Tony TV channel app on all LG, Samsung, and Roku smart TVs across the planet. Now, we've been doing something a little different at the start of each show, and I'm going to continue to do that, and it's in relation to our beautiful Indigenous members of the community, and it's called Welcome to Country, and it goes a little bit like this. I respectfully acknowledge the people of the Yugambeh language region, the traditional owners of the land on which we broadcast, and pay my respect to their elders past and present and all the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples here today and listening live online. Now, as you know, my gorgeous co-host Mel B partners with empathpreneurs to clear subconscious mind webs so that they can leave their legacy on the world. She delivers live talks, demos, presentations to empathic operators negotiating and navigating the chaos of the life so they feel an unwavered confidence around their missions. Mel is also readily available for media and TV presentations to help change leaders and help them amplify their intuitive knowing for growth and expansion. And today's show is all about intuitive knowing. Welcome to the show, Mel.
Hi, we're back.
We are. And again, we've got such a great show. And today we want to talk about intuition and intuitive knowing and the science of intuition in a digital age. And there's an important reason why we want to talk about this stuff, because the digital age is kind of busy and noisy, isn't it, Mel?
Yeah, we are. It's funny, we're more connected than we've ever been and more disconnected from self than we've ever been. And the digital distractions are a real thing and cause some of our unsettlements and disconnect with self. So it's being mindful of the digital stuff.
Yeah, because there's an element of the digital stuff that impacts or can impact our intuitive knowing or that deep understanding of what we're supposed to be doing, where we're supposed to be, our life path, and the course of our deepest knowing. So this being sensitive to your intuitive knowing is important, isn't it, Mel?
Yeah, and the intuition is probably, again, there's this kind of polarity between a large percentage of the population is tuned out more than ever, and equally those who are intuitively are more ramped up and more tuned in than ever. So we've got this kind of disparity with, again, with the digital distractions. And the importance of intuition is, it's like your moral compass. It's your internal compass. We really need to be clear and not switch off our own radar, our own digital connection to other people and to whatever our empathic gifts are, and how we connect with the messages and the intuitive hits that we need to be connecting with. It's guiding us for our success in life. And so really knowing when something is coming through as an intuitive hit is, it's critical, because most of us have learned how to tune that out and switch it off and ignore it. And that's part of the problem.
It is. It is. When we're younger, it actually starts for many of us when we're children, switching off that intuitive knowing. We're called to question it and called to distrust it. That's part of the problem, isn't it? And when you add the digital landscape of today's world, it can be really hard to be quiet enough and mm-hmm. sensitive enough to hear those inner promptings that are so important across humanity.
Yeah, and most of us are more intuitive than we realize. And like you say, we've been taught, and we'll get into this, a lot of it is because of this materialistic, the importance we've placed on science and the materialism of the world. And I'm really going to help us understand that the science is way past that philosophical view of what materialism consciousness is. And we're going to get into that, which is so cool. But enable us to get back in touch with self. That's the most important thing. And that's what it's all about.
Mel, I was reflecting on our notes this morning, and the first of those notes is around sensitivity, and a thought dropped into my mind about the number of times that I've been told across my life that I'm too sensitive. And I think that we're at that place where we shouldn't have to defend our own sensitivity.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the need to defend your sensitivity?
Look, I guess I don't need to justify myself to anyone. I'm so okay with myself that if someone doesn't agree with me, I don't need to go into bat and just, okay, you don't agree with me. We can have a conversation. You don't see my perspective. All right. I don't need to convince you or change your perspective. If what I've shared doesn't align, then so be it. And so I help people understand the different intuitive senses they can have, or the different clair senses, which we've touched on previously. And these are these sensitivities that you're talking about, is you're too sensitive. Well, what that can mean, and I'm just going to refer to some notes here. So most of these I experience on different degrees. But the sensing emotions, and particularly, for example, other people's anxieties or other people's sadness, I'm so tuned in. So my skill that I have amplified, I really tune into and can sense other people's feelings, their emotions, their energy in motion. And that's clair empathy. Obviously, I'm supporting other empaths. Makes sense. That's my strongest skill, if you like, or gift. And then these others, people will go, oh, I've experienced that. And this is like normal phenomenon. This is just normal experiences. And people kind of dismiss it as a little bit woo-woo or a lot woo-woo. But physical feeling, which is clairsentience, that's when people get goosebumps.
Yes.
Or chills on on their spine. Or I get like invisible cobwebs. I feel little cobwebs on my face. So that feeling on our body is clairsentience. And a lot of people have experienced that, but kind of just don't really, I guess, acknowledge it enough to keep it happening, to encourage your body to tune into and pay attention to when it next happens. And then the third one is claircognizant. And that's your gut feelings. Mm-hmm. That's your intuitive knowing, which is what today is about, intuitively. What is your body or your superconscious, body, mind, spirit, telling you? What are the flags it's trying to help you see or become aware of? And we tune out those little warning signs. I'm just going to dismiss them. And as you say, they're really subtle. They're quiet whisperings. It's almost like, here's a little suggestion for you. It's your life. You can do what you want. They are the beautiful intuitive. Ego trying to warn you and tell you you're not good enough or blah, blah, blah. Loud messages you can almost tune out of because they're from ego. but the quiet whisperings, the knowings, the things that don't have agenda attached to them, that's usually our intuitive guidance. This is all the stuff we want to amplify, make more. Yeah.
And Mel, is that why it's important to have quiet time in your everyday life? Is that one of the most important reasons to set aside quiet time for reflection so that you can be aware of those intuitive feelings, thoughts, prompts, those gut feelings? Is that what knowing your intuition is all about?
And you've actually ticked off one of the things I was going to share towards the end of the show is how can you amp up your intuitive knowing? What are the
so
hacks
we
to
will
this?
We will do that at the end of the show.
I want to respond and say yes. Sitting quietly is absolutely one of them. And one of my favorite ways, the easiest way of doing that, is when you're driving. Or if you don't drive, maybe when you're commuting, is not listening to podcasts, is not reading a book, is what in the Eastern world is mindful thinking. So there's a phrase that goes something like, in the Eastern world, if you see a man sitting doing nothing, you don't interrupt him. He's doing his most important work.
Yeah.
Whereas
good.
In the Western world, if somebody's sitting doing nothing, they're not being productive. That's the materialism again of we should be doing, whereas the Eastern philosophy is we should be being. So as we're doing things like driving, when we do get to switch off, we get to open up our subconscious. We can tune out from the actions of driving and let our thoughts flow. And I tell you, it's like the hits that come through when you're in the shower because your mind is just so open. So those are the best times, the quiet times. And I want to just touch to a few more of the Claires because this actually leads into them. So Claire audio is when you hear things. That's a big one for me. Now, there would be a time not that long ago that would make you schizophrenic. That would make you mad.
True.
Because you're hearing voices. Now, are you hearing voices that are helpful and guiding? Or are you hearing like true schizophrenia where it's something that
it's
is
not
serving, not good for you. So for example, last night as I was falling asleep, I got a message about a client and I just made a note of it so I could get to sleep. And I sent the message because I had this, her name, the thing that she might've been doing or thinking about.
Yes.
And here's the message about it. So this just came through as I'm falling asleep. So you can do meditation, you can just switch off and sit quietly. You can go for walks. Walks is a powerful way of allowing yourself to open, switch off from the digital and tune in. So, and the other one is clear vision. Most people, most of my clients, the highest percentage of my clients are clear vision. So their imagination can give us the visual messages that we need. And that can lead to the next thing that's mostly known as ESP, where we're thinking of other people we might see. If you think of the concept of twins, they're seeing what their twin is experiencing. And the science has been done around these things. And the last one, which most people might relate to, is Reiki, where you can feel with your body, with your body on someone else's body. Now, Reiki is above the surface. You're not actually touching, but clairtangents is when you're feeling in your body something from someone else. So all of these clairs are part of our, you're too sensitive. Well, maybe you haven't worked out how to work with your sensitivities. There's no such thing as being too sensitive, quite frankly.
Thank you, Mel. I was reflecting on that this morning and thinking, this is a wonderful conversation. Mel, I'm curious about what the science says, and we've talked a little about this before, but it's a great conversation because people go, oh, that's not scientific and it's woo-woo. And we've talked about this before, but what does the science say?
Thank you. I'm good. And this is a big part of what I wanted to really share today. So I'm going to be reflecting on my notes because I want to state it the way the science has been declared. So I will be referring and looking away from the camera a few times. But this is where I'm getting all my references from. Why Woo-Woo Works by David Hamilton. This was only published in 2020. So in...
Gosh.
Yeah, it's hot off the press. And he references the pandemic as well. What he states is that during his studies at the start of being a scientist and a doctor, it was always drilled into him that, and I quote, that you must examine the data and never say anything simply because you've read it or heard about it. And yet he frequently heard that other fellow scientists or researchers would say things like, there is absolutely no evidence of PSI, which is parapsychological phenomenon, which is what we're talking about, intuitive stuff, but the consciousness is creating. And yet, whilst he found that many of them are coming from a good place, and we can explain why, remind or ask me later about why there's so much fear in the science community around this topic, he says, while it's often well intended, it's usually uttered by people that have never conducted or examined any of the statistical evidence of PSI. So the people are making these sweeping comments about woo-woo doesn't work and intuition's crock of crap and consciousness isn't a real thing. But it's coming from people who haven't really looked and studied it themselves. They're just making these sweeping statements. Therefore, oh, I'll get to that later. But therefore, they're not really being scientific themselves. Now, David Hamilton's book, PhD, has over 220 references to studies and research and science. He's collating. That's just 220 of what he did put in the book, let alone what he didn't put in the
book. There will be
more. So he has done the research, and there's so much to back what I'm about to share. I'm going to share direct quotes from some of that. So can we talk about consciousness now?
Yes, please. I'd love to talk about consciousness. That would be phenomenal.
Okay.
Would you like this? We have a wonderful, for the audience, we have a wonderful graphic to share.
But
yes, I'll
please.
Let Mel prompt me when she,
you want to share that. Yeah, now? Let's share it now. Yeah, go ahead. So this is summarized from David Hamilton's book. This is basically me depicting what he has said. And he explains this as the journey of philosophy into the studies of consciousness. And so what he, if we start at the bottom, the materialist comes from a point of view where science and the accomplishment in that kind of scientific world has come to the conclusion that everything is made out of matter, particles.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? So we live in a physical world. That's what we talk about, materialism.
Yes.
It's a materialistic world. But what they discover is that matter can't explain what consciousness is. Right?
No, it can't.
So that, they move through and they start to believe that both consciousness and matter exist. So the two things are in duality and that they are fundamental existences.
Yes.
But then they're trying to solve or answer the question of, well, what is each of their intrinsic nature? So what is consciousness and how is it different, even though it's a fundamental thing? So they've established that. How is it different from the materialistic world, the objects that we interact with?
Yeah.
So now we move into the third stage, which is, you know, how are we separate? I use the ocean diagrams of, well,
yes,
am
beautiful.
I part of the ocean? Am I separate from the ocean? Well, the next layer of the evolution of these scientists and philosophy is that the physics can explain the structure of the matter. So physics goes into, well, what is all of this matter? What are all these particles and protons and all the scientific words? Well, they now understand what they do and the structure of them. but they can't explain what it is. What is the nature of that matter? More importantly, what is the nature of consciousness? So then they're still trying to, what is consciousness?
Oh, okay.
So now, so they move through from being pan-scientists to exploring the nature of matter. What is, what if you think about the instincts of animals, well, what is the instinct? What is the nature of consciousness? And at this point, idealism, which isn't about idealist and positivity, it's like this is the philosophical view of the world, is consciousness is matter. Everything is consciousness. It is one and the same.
Really?
Consciousness is all there is. So matter does not create consciousness. Now I'm going to quote, matter does not create consciousness. Consciousness isn't an experience of matter. So the particles don't make it conscious. They're one in the same. Everything, the nature of the universe, are just simple expressions of the same thing. Not how we resonate with ourselves, not how we resonate with the environment or the universe. So let me explain. A drop in an ocean is a particle of its own, and it has subparticles within that drop of the ocean. So as it sprays out of a wave, for example, it has a unique experience.
Yes.
Then it might reintegrate back into the wave and has a different experience.
Yep. Because it's been propelled through air and time.
Yeah, time's a different one. We won't talk about time. But it's like reintegrated back with the wave. And then the wave reintegrates back into the ocean. So it's all one and the same. It just has different experiences at different points, multiple experiences. The difference is, as humans, we're more complex in our matter than a drop of ocean. But it's all still the same. It's an expression of consciousness. I didn't make this up. The science told me that this is the path that David is suggesting, philosophers and scientists and quantum physics and that realm. And I'm sorry if anybody's watching who completely, if I've misquoted you, but that's my surmise of me trying to explain how the science of consciousness provides evidence that consciousness is a real thing in of itself, and that the matter is an expression of the consciousness. Got me? Clear?
It's relatively clear. I'm so glad that you did a presentation for us. So how do we link all this back to the science? I'm going to stop sharing for a moment.
Yeah. So how do we link it back? Well, let me give an example of how science is done and how science cannot be helpful for what we're trying to say, that this consciousness, that our intuitive knowings aren't real, that we are two senses, that it's all in our mind. So say we wanted to, say they, the scientists or study group, wants to establish how fast humans can run, right? It's just like, we're just going to do some science now. And so they round up 1,000 people from the population, all races, all ethnics, both genders, all genders, like a complete range, all inclusive collection of the general population. Then they say, go ahead, run 100 meters and we'll time you. So they get all this data from the 1,000 people and they kind of come up with roughly around 20 seconds, give or take. So it creates this bell curve of like 17 to 23 seconds. That's the average of the population, right? So the conclusion of that piece of science would be the average human can run 100 meters in 20 seconds, right? So that's how science is kind of conducted. And here is how it can go wrong, because it's not including this sort of example. So we all know that Usain Bolt was able to run in under 10 seconds, right? So if that happened in a scientific study, let me get that right, his results would be averaged into the means of all 1,000. So right. The fact that he did it would actually be dulled down. His findings would be dismissed as a faulty result, maybe even fraudulent behavior by the human. Right? So that's how scientific studies are done. Any anomalies are averaged out.
Discarded.
And so yet one of the pillars of science is to investigate and understand the anomalies, not to dismiss it without looking at it. But that's what happens in PSI research.
Okay.
So even though we know we have evidence that he did it in under 10 seconds and that other people are able to do it just as fast, these elite people are very capable of achieving what science would have actually proven to be unachievable. Yet because the materialistic has seen it, we're like, well, no, that's not true. But in the scientific studies, it would average out. Now, this is what happens in PSI when PSI abilities have been unexpectedly discovered in science studies when they're trying to prove or discredit genes or traits or gifts. Like they're going into it, there'd be one person that creates an anomaly. But what they actually do is, and what they found is, some people repeatedly score higher than all of the norm. And so they actually, well, that's fake. That's not real. Something different, but we're not going to focus on that. We just average it out. Instead of looking at, well, what are the genes or traits or gifts or abilities? What makes that person unique? The droplet in the ocean? What makes them have a unique experience? And let's leverage whatever they're doing. The science is now starting to do that. So what is making that person more prone to these kind of results instead of squashing or ridiculing or calling them liars? And that's what we want to do. Can I just add one more thing? They say we're satisfied that people can sense the future before it happens. This is Dick Bierman, who's a Dutch psychologist with molecular physics background. He says, we would now like to move on from where the people can see the future before it happens and see what kind of person is particularly good at it.
Oh, wow.
So that's what we're trying. Well, that's not what we're trying. That's what we're trying to bring into mainstream conversation. That's where the science is moving into.
Oh, that's exciting.
I know, right?
That's really exciting that scientists are accepting that there are humans within our population that have innate abilities that we may not understand a lot about, but that they exist absolutely, and the science is going to go into that and try and figure out how that works, I'm guessing. So why is there so much skepticism for endorsing PSI?
So, and what I want to just add on the end of that is, we don't make elite skills people in the world wrong. We don't call it woo-woo. We might be like blown away by their talents. You know, children that are born and able to create, what's that orchestra? The words just escaped. When they, a symphony, they can write it.
Yes, a symphony.
And they have no training. Like, they're still kids. They don't even know what a symphony is. I don't even know what makes up a symphony. But children are born with this. And some parents nurture that. And so they tune into that gene. You know, like the Williams sisters, who had a natural gift for tennis with a hand-eye coordination. All of these elite gifts, skills, talents, genes. We should be, I'm not talking about elitism. I'm talking about uniqueness. Harnessing each of our gifts and not making it woo-woos. Like, we're not saying you're a witch because you have a gift that makes you so crazy because the science has been able to tangibly quantify that gift, as in you can hit a ball really well or you can run really fast. So why are we so afraid, was your question?
Yes, why are we so afraid? Why do those things cause fear within humanity? Is it around the fact that they can't quantify that in their own brain? Is that where the fear stems from? Is that why we fear things we don't understand?
Yeah, I was just going to make that statement. I think people are uncomfortable with what they can't comprehend. And so it's just deflecting, well, that can be possible. But the fears within the scientific community. Again, David shares a few notes that I want to bring in, and this is through my reading of the book. So why science is a little bit anti-woo, or some sciences, fear of endorsing leads to the credence to the existence of God. And that's not a problem other than God controls our lives, which means scientifically, well, how can we prove whether something else external is controlling consciousness? So that's one argument or concern. Yep. Another one is feeding into the magical unscientific systems that can shatter then other pieces of sciences that have been proven. So it's like the conflict. If we say that's true, then does that make that not true? So, we don't want to do that. We want to open up the possibility. Then the third reason that David outlines is that consciousness is produced by our brain. Consciousness is an internal thing. It has nothing to do with the universe. And so therefore it's impossible for us to intuitively connect or psychically. It's like if it's produced in the brain, the physics can't explain how that's affecting something outside the human body.
Right.
That's one of the reasons, apparently. Another is what we more would assume would be people afraid of is just attaching their name, because there's so much
negativity,
backlash,
and disbelief.
So they just don't want to say anything. So they might believe in it, they might not do the research on it, they might give it credence and be nodding in agreement, but they don't want to be associated in any way in case it affects their reputation for the real hard science that they're doing. And that and this is a really important one, that accepting alternative solutions, and this is really topical with the pandemic at the moment, and I don't want to go into that, but that by accepting alternative or PSI, it will stop us using life-saving science and the advice that's not advice that is useful being disregarded. So that is a really tangible.
And that's what's happening across the world. And I don't understand why they can't interlink together.
Yes, that's right.
I think they go hand in hand. I think science goes hand in hand with all of those things that we don't understand. I think they are inherently linked, and I think that they are would be more powerful together than as we see a lot of things split apart into this side or that side, when in fact, if they both come together, there would be a powerful different way of living and understanding life as a human.
And that definitely got me through chemo. Absolutely, that got me through chemo, by integrating the physical fixing of my body. So the materialistic thing that needs to be removed. Yes. And then using my gifts for myself to surrender into the discomfort I was experiencing each day, or the fears that I was coming up with, and resignating that that's just a fear. That's not a reality. Let's clear that out. Okay, I can address the rest of the day. So I was able to integrate and find subconscious things that needed to be addressed that maybe I wouldn't have come across as easily as when I was so energetically depleted during chemo.
And the other component of that too is, Mal, by virtue of the fact that you're having chemo, you are forced to stop and be still for long periods of time whilst undergoing that treatment. Another important consideration in the whole of our discussion today. It's
in fact, that's when I started reading these books. That's when I made space for myself to read and reflect, and I would watch a video or something, or, you know, I would consume some content and then ponder it. And really think, okay, how does, what question does that bring up next for me, my world, my teachings, my client work? And I did not know anything about this philosophical journey of understanding how the world is put together. I didn't know I was an idealist. I thought an idealist was, you know, like a positivity.
Yeah.
No, that's actually a philosophical. It's like, oh, okay, I'm an idealist. I didn't know that. That's how I see the world coming together. And I wouldn't have come across half this research that I'm sharing with you, and these things that have evolved, and the knowing that I've taken, and the acceptance and the adoption and the shifting that my business, I've never been more busy than after I came back from chemo.
Now, along the lines of the topics we're talking about today, and do you think as humans start to investigate, research, and ponder on these topics, we will see a rise in consciousness, so a rise in understanding how there's more things outside of ourselves and our human experience that we may not understand, and that the fact that you don't have to understand the ins and outs of something to see its impacts on your life and the lives of others?
I think that rise of the consciousness, I think that's those kind of statements is what creates a disconnect for some people, because
it's got to be a better word than rise, Mel. I agree with you.
But I get why we say
I don't understand how else to describe it. It's like a bulk of humanity are searching for different answers and different perspectives.
Yeah, and I agree. I think, you know, you hear the phrases tossed around like people are waking up. What I think is a more compassionate way of looking at society and humanity is we are accepting this intuitive knowing. We are accepting that we have elite genes and gifts that some of us have really acknowledged and going, okay, I'm going to develop that. And I want to be the most elite empathic operator I can be. Now, I'm not trying to put myself anywhere other than my most fullest potential. And if the science is now starting to finally catch up, that's creating the awakening, great, because then it's not so them and us, which is what
we
want.
It's a broader understanding across humanity that these things are available to humans, and with a little bit of thought, exploration, etc., some of these things you may discover that you have an innate ability to see the future, and allowing children in their most innocent time and space where they go and have those huge, big imaginations. It's about keeping their imaginations and their ideas going and not stomping on them and saying, I don't believe you. That's not true. It's allowing humans to develop to their best selves. And how could you not be a better human if you can see things that others can't, or you can feel things, or you can know things? And at a very basic level, I think that every human being has intuitive capabilities. Is that your experience, Mel? That everyone has an innate intuition, but that some people embrace it and develop it to its fullest potential, whereas others ignore it and stamp it down? Is that your experience?
Yeah, look, I think we're all born with clair senses.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just how we've tuned in or what our upbringing made okay to experience and to nurture. There's some quotes, I just want to pull them up.
Yes, they're very good.
From some Nobel physicists. So these are Nobel Prize winning scientists.
And these are smart people.
Yes. So these are their phrases that help us just, you know what, this stuff is okay. Louise de Broglie, she quotes, "I regard consciousness and matter as different aspects of one and the same thing."
That's cool.
Max Planck, who's considered the father of quantum mechanics, simply, I love this, "I regard consciousness as a fundamental," which means it exists. Consciousness is a thing, a fundamental thing. And then the final one, Erwin Schrödinger, he's really famous quantum physicist. The material universe and consciousness are made of the same stuff.
There you go.
So if these guys are saying it and I'm feeling it and experiencing it, well, I'm going to stop questioning myself.
It's gotta be,
I'm going to roll with it. There's another one, Bernardo Kastrup, who's a PhD in philosophy and has worked at CERN in computer engineering. He described consciousness as the primary. It comes first. That it is, it's the basis of reality. He says, "I'm an idealist. That is, I subscribe to the notion that reality, despite being solid and continuous, is a projection of the mind, i.e. our unique experience creates the consciousness particles around us, which many call manifestation." So to take the woo out of manifestation is we are interacting with the universe, and our perception and unique experience as a droplet is shifting and creating the waves that we're part of, and then it's coming from the ocean. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah. So what you're saying, Mel, is as a human being, it's within our capacity to create or manifest, whatever the words that you like to use, anything that has been placed within our realm of desiring. So number one, humans are unique in the desires and the dreams that they want. So my dreams are not Mel's dreams, and Mel's dreams are not mine. They're unique to us. So therefore, it's about embracing the idea that those unique things that are within us are achievable for us in our lives.
Yeah, and to come back full circle, and that's a really nice segue of the disconnect and the societal digital distractions comes from this wonderful place of trying to make sense of the world and giving us more tools to be more interactive and involved with the world. But we've got to be mindful, and, you know, I haven't watched it, but that social media Netflix show where people who designed and built the social media platforms are like, "I'm unplugging from, and I'm not letting my kids interact because it sucks us in." We're actually tuning out from ourselves.
That's right.
That unique experience. And then when people go, "Oh, that's a bit woo, that's a bit crazy," One of my favorite quotes from this book, and one of the last things I want to refer to my notes, is Jessica Utes. She was the president of the American Statistical Association. And she was conscribed or asked or whatever, paid to do some classified work for the USA on PSI.
Wow.
And when she was delivering, I guess when it was unclassified, to a US Congress, she says, ironically, dismissing something on the basis of a belief and without examining the data is itself pseudoscience. Not the research that's been conducted, but being dismissed as pseudoscience. So the scientists or the people who say, well, that can't be true, and not even examining the data, that is woo-woo. Because you're just creating it out of nowhere. You're actually doing what you're accusing others of doing. I love that.
Yeah. That's a great thing to understand, that there are some seriously intelligent human beings that are pointing us in this direction and saying, don't dismiss these things that you don't understand just because you don't understand them.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that for anyone listening who's going, oh, God, this is a bit woo-woo, don't dismiss. What we're saying is, don't dismiss it because you, A, don't understand it, or B, it's not evident in your life. And that leads me to what Mel does and why you're so passionate about the work that you do, is because it opens up another level of being your best self and being a good human by simply exploring these concepts, or being open to exploring these concepts. You innately create a better world. You innately create a better you. So what a privilege to have Mel talking about these things on the show today. And I want to circle back to something we spoke about earlier and that we've just tapped on again just now. And that's about the noise of the world. And how, if you're listening to us today and you're thinking, gosh, I'd really like to know a bit more about this, number one, connect with Mel. Number two, listen to this replay of the show again. And then finally, we're going to tell you about some of the things that you can do that might start you on that journey of realizing that your brain, your mind within you is innate power, and it comes from intuition. And the way that you access that intuition is to quite simply tap out from the world around you. Mel, what are some other ways that you encourage the people that you talk to do that?
Yeah, I was just checking the time. How long? Because I don't know how deep to go. We got like 3 or 4 minutes, or just 2 minutes?
Yes, we do. Yes, we've got. I've got a good 10 minutes.
Oh, 10 minutes. Okay. So.
Sorry, 5 minutes.
5 minutes.
Sorry,
okay.
Mel, 5 minutes.
That's okay. So, as we said earlier, just taking time out. And I know people struggle with meditation. So don't think of it as meditation. It's just unplugging, just going for a walk with the dog. People love going for walks along the beach because of this reason. It gives them the time to. Just silence, whatever way, particularly getting outside as best you can with isolations and whatever you can do, but get into nature and just give yourself the possibility of connection with your God, connection with yourself, connection with the universe, whatever you believe. I've got 10 minutes. I'm just going to see what comes through. As you say, being quiet.
Yeah. Another and give thing, it a go.
Yeah. Yeah, give it a go and play with the universe. Oh, my Lord. Treat.
It's fun.
Yeah, I like to treat my relationship with the universe like a teenager.
Yes.
I kind of like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if this happened today? And I'm removing the expectation and therefore the disappointment
that
if it
will.
doesn't. But oh my Lord, how cool would it be if that happened? Hey, can I create some consciousness interaction here, please? Can I create my wave? As a droplet, I'm asking my wave to come in because I'm part of the ocean as a droplet. So meditating is more powerful. Now, I did some research, 3 or 4 years ago on millionaires. Mm-hmm. And something like, I forget, 70% of them did some form of meditation and or visualization. And again, it's like, oh, that's woo-woo. There are sporting teams at the top of the championships that use visualization.
It.
Okay, so visualization isn't just mumbo jumbo. And what that can simply mean is just clearing your intention of, I want this meeting to go like this today. And so you're setting your energy to match what your outcomes are desired. And so meditation. Yeah, so that's intuitive setting and visualization. Mm-hmm. Now, if you do meditation, now guided meditations are my hack. Most people think of meditation
Agreed.
As sitting silently and trying to crazily tame this mind that is just going like nuts.
Yeah.
That's not what the monks do. So why should we do it? They've spent months and months and years and isolate themselves so that there isn't so much going on. The life is simpler. There isn't so many distractions going on in life. That's why monks separate themselves from society so it's easier to tame their monkey mind. But guided meditations are the hack because your brain is giving some
focused
an instruction
that.
To follow. Yes, it's focused on something.
Yeah.
My CRP process I've been using for 5 years, it guides people into theta state. And that's so much easier than asking them just to access theta state.
Fantastic.
What other ways for taming intuition or amplifying is paying attention to your gut instincts or those flashes of insight or those words that are like completely, where did that come from? The more obscure, the better. The more you have not thought about this thing and this person comes to mind or this scenario or object or whatever, the more that stuff comes randomly, the more you should pay attention.
So it's the random things that just pop into your mind that the intuition that you should listen to. And again, it can be as simple as thinking of someone and them calling, thinking of someone and they email. It doesn't have to be a huge, big thing, does it, Mel? Like you were describing at the start of the program, you were trying to go to sleep, someone's name dropped in, you wrote a note, and off you went to sleep. And that's really simple, isn't it? And that's lots of humanity can understand that. Now, before we run out of time, what a wonderful conversation to have today. I always learn so much each and every time that we talk. And I want to encourage you, for those of you that are listening that are sensitive, empathic, struggling at the moment. There's the other thing I was going to say, Mel, that there are a lot of people struggling at the moment with a whole range of things. And do you know that there's help out there for each and every one of you? And again, one of those suggestions would be just to have a talk to Mel. Just get on a call and chat and see what you can open up your life too by having access to someone who's dedicated to changing people's lives one person at a time. Mel, thank you so much for being on the show today. We have put links in the chat box to all of Mel's stuff. If you are driving whilst listening, jump onto melwithadoubleb.com. If you put in Mel with
you mean
one
double L,
you'll get the other Mel, me, who is, I mean double L, You've got to put in double L, Mel, double L, B.com, because otherwise you'll get the other Mel, and there's no way that she can help you in the same way that our Mel can. And also, we've put in the links to the Claire Senses as well, so you can jump onto Mel's website and grab that download. It's a great download. I've got it. It's a fabulous way to explain what you think you might be feeling. Mel, thank you once again for being on the show this week. I can't wait for our next show next week. And I look forward to our next chat. That, my friends, is the end of the show for this week. You've been listening to the glorious Mel B on Unwavered Success. And we'll be back next week at the same time for another show. That's it for us. Thank you, Mel. Bye for now.
Everyone. Bye.